Welcome to the Real Docs Podcast. Hosted by Dr. Britt Lesher and Dr. Lisa John. Tune in every Wednesdays for new episodes. This podcast does not act as medical advice and should not be used as a substitute for medical care. Please contact your healthcare professional for questions regarding your health.
Welcome back to the Real Docs Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Dr. Brittany Lesher.
And I'm Dr. Lisa Jung.
And today we are on season 3, episode 5 of our podcast. And we're going to be talking all about how to improve your digestion. Tips that we would like to share about how you can improve your digestion if you're dealing with bloating, constipation, nausea, diarrhea, all of those types of things, and just come some general tips for like how people can go about helping your digestion. Maybe we'll touch on a couple of different kind of conditions that people can be maybe dealing with and when it would probably be time to go and seek a healthcare provider's kind of help with some of the things that you're dealing with. But these are just going to be very general kind of tips for helping you get through all of the digestive process.
Couple conditions, but I guess we can start from there. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the symptoms that you mentioned already, right? The bloating, stomach pain, you know, diarrhea, constipation, so forth and so on. I think the number one, probably the diagnosis or condition that comes to our mind whenever we think about that, and you already know how much I don't like this diagnosis because it's a very trash diagnosis, is irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times people may be dealing with all of these, you know, random symptoms and may not actually think that something's going on because that's how they've always been, especially in patients who identify with IBS or have been diagnosed with IBS. Usually they've been dealing with these symptoms for so long, or they notice an extreme change in their symptoms. They go to see a provider, they get worked up, everything comes back inconclusive or normal, and then they get put in this bucket of IBS. And we've kind of talked about how before, like, IBS is not really the perfect diagnosis for some of these people. And so I think kind of diving into digestion, just some general things for people to know about. Digestion actually starts in your mouth, right? So we start salivating, that start the process of breaking down your food, and then it goes all the way down to, well, you know where. So
you know where.
You know where. So that whole process, like, there's so many steps that happen along the way. If something happens along those steps that kind of throws off digestion, then you can start to notice a lot of those symptoms. So you really have to work with a provider sometimes to get to the root of, like, which one of those steps is not working adequately for you. Maybe some of the things that you're doing are not actually supporting each step of the way. And maybe there's things that you're eating or things that you're drinking that's not supporting each step of the way.
Every time I talk with patients about just digestion, right? It's mm-hmm. not just, you know, one process, if you will, that goes within the digestion. It's multiple different, you know, chemicals or different organs and a lot of involvement, as you also mentioned it too. And I like to kind of use the analogy of it's an orchestra, you know, things have to happen. There's certain sections of the orchestra and then they all come together to make this beautiful harmony of your bowel movement.
I thought you were going to say something else, but what? Kind of along those lines make of a like, make a beautiful package. Tips. Let's just go back and forth. Maybe we can start from the top. Acid reflux and things like that, right? Like, a lot of times people can feel indigestion, acid reflux. That's kind of starting in the stomach, which is like not the first step in the digestive process, but probably like the second step in the digestive process. And I think a lot of times when people feel acid reflux or heartburn, indigestion, I think the quick thing that people probably will reach for is like a proton pump inhibitor or these acid reflux agents, right?
Or Tums.
Yeah. And I think those things tend to get in the way of the actual digestive process. Yes, it kind of helps with the acid production, but it actually gets in the way of you being able to like absorb your nutrients down the road. And so oftentimes when it comes to preventing acid reflux, we're talking to patients about chewing your food and eating it slowly, right? So that you can adequately break up your food, giving your body some time to actually jumpstart that enzyme producing process, because our body has to release acids. When food hits our stomach, we have to jumpstart that enzymatic process to break down things. And oftentimes, if we're so distracted, if we're eating on the go, eating in our car, eating watching TV, eating while we're doing work, our body doesn't actually allow for adequate release of those things. And so people oftentimes will experience this sort of like indigestion feeling. And it's because they're really not giving their body the actual attention that the gut needs in order to digest those and break down those foods.
I'm actually really glad that you brought up the reflux and that's what we're starting on, because I feel like most folks, and even in the conventional side, right? Anytime anybody has heartburn or reflux, it's always in this mindset of too much acid production. But you can actually have reflux and heartburn symptoms even with low stomach acid production. So things like hypochloridia, that's what we think about whenever there is that like low stomach acid. The other piece that gets really, it's sad that it always gets like the short end of the stick and doesn't really get like noticed or anything like that, is also, you know, we can have something called a biliary reflux, where if your gallbladder is not, you know, emptying out all of the bile for, you know, digestion, fat metabolism, things like that, and it builds up, it can actually reflux back into your stomach, which irritates the stomach lining, and then your stomach doesn't know any better. It's just going to create and produce stomach acid as almost like a defense mechanism, if you will, or as a reaction, right? And that's going to cause a lot of these symptoms. From the beyond naked eye, it just looks like, oh, I just have too much acid, when really it's not really like the target, where those PPIs or TUMS, sure, they're good for quote unquote like symptom management, but it's not really targeting where it should be addressed. Cause. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something to also, you know, consider, and even maybe bring up to your provider if you are having heartburn and you want to know, am I a too much acid producer or too low of an acid producer? Or how is my bile or gallbladder function? All of that, because that's going to give you a little more tailored sort of treatment pathway, if you will. And then the indigestion part, I feel like we always, you know, talk about digestion process happening definitely starting at the mouth, but technically it's like up in the brain because of the gut brain axis, right?
I see.
Because it's also like you seeing food and you're like, oh, there's food, and you salivate, right? The salivation, obviously, that starts within our oral cavity, whatever that is, you know, our mouth. But it's that like signal and that the connection of like, oh my God, here's this delicious meal and all this sort of stuff. So that's why, like Dr. Britt said, you know, making sure that you're eating, when you're eating, make sure you don't have any distractions. Make sure you're not eating in a stressful situation, whether it's you're buried in work and you're just trying to scarf down food, when you should actually be like, this is my mealtime. I'm going to eat. I'm going to not work, or, you know, shut up my screen for 5 minutes or whatever. Maybe don't eat within 5 minutes. Or even things like, and I know we do this, I do this a lot, that I know I need to stop, but not watching either TV or social media stuff. We know in terms of like news or like updates on the world or the country or anything like that, it can get pretty stressful, which is, guess what, not a good thing to have while you're eating.
We always talk about like the nervous system being involved with your gut. Like, you're not actively needing to tell your gut to do all of these things. It's kind of automatic. And that automatic nervous system is controlled by our parasympathetic, which is our rest and digest. Parasympathetic nervous system is like when we are very in our zen, when we're very relaxed, when things are not high intensity, when we're not in fight or flight. So that's kind of like a good point too, is like, don't be distracted when you eat. Really take some time out. Don't look at your phone. Just focus on your meal. And that can actually jumpstart the process too of getting things worked working better so that you break down your food. The other thing I was going to say that I often tell patients too is consider something like a bitters or like bitter spray, bitters supplement, or just eating bitter foods. We were taught many different bitter foods like ginger, chamomile. What are your favorites?
Arugula, dandelion greens, radish,
artichoke. Yeah. Artichoke is another good one. Yeah. I was always so surprised that chamomile was considered a bitter, because we are always thinking that it's like a nervous system relaxant. So that might be a really good one. And a lot of people know chamomile. That might be your like gateway herb into all of these things, because it's not super bitter, but it's like both calming and a bitter. But they also make really great tincture forms of bitters. And the bitterness in these kinds of herbs actually help you to stimulate more of this gastric release and more of these enzymes as well in your mouth. So I think all of that together kind of just puts together this better picture for your body to be able to break down food.
Going back to the nervous system thing really quick, that's where a lot of like the polyvagal theory kind of comes in, right? So this sounds really... it might sound really silly, but I actually implore you to try it. And if you're having dinner with friends or family and they might look at you weird or judge you, you know, maybe educate them and then have them do this with you. So it's kind of like a dinner ritual, if you will. But, you know, really toning like your vagus nerve, which is usually kind of around your neck, right? So making sure those are kind of prime before you start eating so that you can have better tap into the parasympathetic nervous system in terms of that calm, rest and digest, if you will. So humming, gargling, which I know sounds kind of, you know, not good manners. But again, this is why you have to tell your people that you're eating with, like, this is what I'm doing and this is for my like own good. So you should do it together and maybe start like a semi-cult. But yeah, humming, singing, gargling with water or tea or something that you
would talking have. Help? Yeah. Like, I wonder if like talking like...
Yeah, maybe don't scream.
Okay. I was wondering if it's like... You know how people like pray before they eat? Some people pray before they eat. I wonder if that like...
Cause any of like the like trilling the... of the, I think.
Interesting. Yeah.
So really good way to kind of start that process if you want to start eating. And then chamomile, really good for the nervous system, like you mentioned. It's also a good carminative herb. So really good for like reducing and like passing gas out of your abdominal cavity and outwards.
Yeah, like for the bloating, right? Yeah. So then we get into the kind of small intestine area where we have kind of mentioned in previous episodes before, like a lot of things can happen in that area where maybe there's bacterial overgrowth, maybe there's fungal overgrowth. And so people can notice a lot of bloating and this sense of like gas. Sometimes people have so much gas and bloating that it actually causes abdominal pain. And so the carminatives, I loved the carminative herbs that we talked about too, like with peppermint being one of them, peppermint, chamomile, being able to dispel a lot of these gas. Don't just reach for the gas X, right? Yeah. Bloating is probably one of the main concerns that a lot of people will come in to see like a provider about, because it's just so, it can be very painful. It can be very uncomfortable. Some people like are concerned about like maybe the aesthetics of what they look like. Some people's bloating are so severe that they like report being like feeling pregnant right after a meal. And that's always kind of a good telltale sign, like the bloating has kind of gone too far. If you like can't fit your clothes after a meal, those types of things.
A lot of people, and a lot of my patients also do this too, I feel like probably yours too, but it's always like, what should I take for bloat relief or for digestion support and things like that? But even before we even get into like supplements and things like that, it's like things you can incorporate into your food in like maybe like the beverages that you drink, or just like the little modifications around eating before we even get into, I feel like, the supplement end of things. I feel like bitters is a great kind of like in between of like, well, it's technically herbs and things that we would be also helping to stimulate, you know, gastric juice release or, you know, bile flow or whatever have you. But it's also this thing where you can actually mix it into like warm water and then you can drink it almost like tea. before you start eating and all that stuff.
Another thing that I tend to see a lot of times too, like if patients come in with GI complaints and we end up doing some sort of testing, a main thing that I tend to see is this idea of dysbiosis. And no, a lot of those people, unfortunately, get put in the bucket of IBS, but there's not been like adequate workup done to test their if there is actually dysbiosis present. So for those of you who don't know, dysbiosis is very different from infection, like a gut infection or bacterial overgrowth. I feel like I have to explain this so often to patients because it gets thrown around so much. Oh, I have dysbiosis or I have SIBO, and people are just kind of use those words interchangeably. I kind of like to explain it like your gut guard. Like if dysbiosis is like everything that's supposed to be in your garden is there, it's growing, but it's just that everything is very disorganized. Some things are growing more, some plants are taking over other plants' lane, people are not staying in their rows, those types of things.
Stealing your resources.
Exactly. Like they're just covering, you know, shading the sunlight maybe. Like things are just a bit unorganized because things are not growing evenly. And with infection, which having dysbiosis can definitely predispose you to getting an infection. But with an infection, it's like something from the outside coming in, something that's not supposed to be there is now in your garden because your garden has been vulnerable because it's like growing all crazy, right?
Like so, the snails coming into your garden to eat all your harvest.
The pests, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And so the treatment for those things are very different. Oftentimes we will hear of like people getting put on the low FODMAP diet, which is like a very restrictive form of eating for a lot of these people. And it's essentially people get told like, avoid these carbohydrates that tend to ferment and make gas and all of those types of things. But in reality, it's not a sustainable treatment plan. Like you really have to get to the root of why your body is not able to process these things well, why your gut is imbalanced, right? So I think before we even say like you should take a probiotic, because I see so many people now like grabbing probiotics, like probiotics are not the answer to everything, right? Like they are great. We use them a lot in practice, but they can actually make things worse because you're actually adding more chefs to the kitchen and adding more. It's like going into your garden that's growing haywire and just like throwing fertilizer everywhere. It's like that's not going to clean up the mess. You really have to like go in and do the due diligence of cleaning up, right?
I'm so glad that you mentioned this too, because I feel like other subset questions that we get a lot probably is, what's the difference between dysbiosis and SIBO? And for me, whenever I talk with patients about that, I basically tell them, well, in my perspective and how I approach it is that dysbiosis is kind of this like general kind of like bigger umbrella thing, right? Exactly what Dr. Britt said. It's kind of things overgrowing, undergrowing, stealing resources, and just a lot of that haywire that's happening. SIBO is almost like the subset within that dysbiosis where we're seeing that bacterial overgrowth only within the small intestines that we shouldn't be seeing. Now, going back to the general term of dysbiosis, that can incorporate not just bacteria, but things like fungus, things like viruses that can also overgrow. It doesn't always mean things are overgrowing. Again, it can also include things that are undergrowing, that's throwing off that balance, the harmony, whatever have you. So if that's something that you've always wondered about, that's usually how I see it and how we approach it. Treatments can look kind of similar. I am, and this is my personal opinion, I hate low FODMAP diet. I hate SIBO because
it's not a true treatment. It's again, just another symptom management.
Yeah. Right? And oftentimes, and I see this so many times in both, I think, the specialist visits or even functional world, that, you know, people get trained of, oh, this is SIBO, so this is what we use as, you know, either the antibiotics or antimicrobials, and that's it. But I feel like it doesn't really get due diligence of looking at it further step of, well, what's your digestive function doing? What is your gut immunity doing? What's your intestinal lining doing? All these other things that really contribute, again, to this harmony and the orchestra of your digestion and gut microbiome, right? So oftentimes people will go, you know, do their SIBO testing, gets positive, do multiple rounds of the herbal or regular antibiotics or even the low FODMAP diet. and there is this just recurrence, and that should be a sign that there's something that's not looked at, that's missing, that really should be addressed and evaluated so that we can really put that recurrence at bay.
I notice that so often too, the recurrence factor with a lot of people, and maybe people don't know that, you know, the things that you're doing on a regular basis is actually setting up your gut to being more predisposed to these types of things. So one thing that I try to have patients do is be very mindful after going through treatment. Once we've cleared all of these issues, hopefully you should be able to tolerate more like fibrous foods. I usually have people like eat the rainbow. That's really one thing that you can do to improve your digestion, is really implement a variety of different things. We know that a variety of different fruits and vegetables on a regular basis do impact your microbiome. So that's something that you can do. I even just have people start with like pick three to four different colors, and then try to incorporate that through the week to make it really easy. Like pick your two or three favorite vegetables and try to consume that on a consistent basis. And then that can be, I feel like my new term is gateway. That can be a gateway into consuming just more vegetables. Cause I, whenever I do diet recalls with people, I'm so surprised by how many people are eating like very ultra processed, like bland food that are just in like the brown and white category. Like there's no color, right? So eat color. That's really one way to improve your digestion, like, and to get things flowing better.
Or even like things like stress management. I feel like we always talk about stress and everything, right? And there's a good reason, because it's a really main factor to a lot of different conditions and diseases and all this stuff. So even after you do a SIBO treatment and, you know, things are looking great, you have to make sure the external factors, whether it's the diet, whether it's stress, whether it's your lifestyle, all of those are also being changed and modified and adjusted with it as well. So you're not off the hook just because you took antibiotics. One thing I really like for, and this is a little bit more into like Chinese medicine, and I think I want to say Ayurveda. I don't know too much about that sort of field. Obviously, I'm not trained in it, but at least from a lot of like the different residencies and trainings I've gone through with some exposure to those therapies, warm spices in your food are really great. It brings that warmth and blood flow to your digestive cavity, organs, all that sort of stuff. So we're really getting all the good support around that digestion process. So, you know, spice up your food as much as you can, you know, not to a point where you're like, I don't taste the chicken, it's just all spices. But you know, things like paprika, peppers are really good ways, and I feel like most people do season their foods. I hope you season your food. Garlic, you know, ginger, cinnamon, like all these things that are, it doesn't always have to be spicy, but just think of like the fall, like pumpkin spice, like that kind of sort of like sensation, if you will.
Back to kind of things that you can do after a meal, right? Like obviously we've talked about like not being stressed. A lot of times I like to encourage people to move their bodies after a meal, and that can help to stimulate blood flow to the organs, but also like getting your metabolism started, right? Part the beginning process of metabolism is digesting your food, because that's how we get all of the nutrients from the food. And so not only is it going to help with blood sugar, but it's going to help with blood flow. It can also be very stress relieving to just take a very slow, easy walk around the block, like 15 minutes, doesn't have to be anything crazy. We try to tell patients to not only for blood sugar, not only for cardiovascular health, but just like move your body, right? Don't stay stagnant. That's like the one thing that I tend to see often. Of course, you're not feeling like you're digesting your food. You're literally eating your food and then going to go lay down right literally after.
Other thing when it comes to maybe like supplement, I love a good digestive enzyme.
Oh yeah, we know you love your digestive enzymes.
Yes, I carry them with me everywhere I go. And there's, you know, different formulas or different sort of sources. I think if you're like more plant-based and don't eat animal papaya enzymes are like a big one. There's a whole blend of different ones. The one I like, and this is my personal bias, I really like it because it has not only the digestive enzymes, but a little bit of ox bile, a little bit of betaine hydrochloride, which is basically stomach acid. So you have kind of everything for that, you know, different processes of the digestion that is within that capsule to really help you. And I think one common thing that I see people do, don't take your digestive enzymes after you eat. Do it literally at the start of your meal. One thing that I see when people take their enzymes without food coming in afterwards or on like relatively like emptier stomach, it can actually make you nauseous and cause stomach cramping and a lot of like these GI symptoms that you're trying to mitigate.
So this is just kind of some general tips, like talk through a couple of things that could be going on. Obviously, if these things have been going on for a pretty long time, you definitely want to consider working with a provider, maybe a naturopathic provider, to get to the root cause of a lot of your issues. I think some of the things that we're going to be touching on in this episode, we have future plans to like break apart. This is just a gateway conversation into some little things that you can be mindful of when you're trying to digest your food. And if you guys have any questions, feel free to leave them in the comment section. Give us a thumbs up, subscribe so you can stay up to date on all of our episodes coming out. And as always, be real
and stay well.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Real Docs Podcast. Don't forget to like and share this episode and follow us on our social media pages. Tune in every Wednesday for more episodes.